A Final Four preview of what lies ahead as the women tips off tomorrow, followed by the men on Saturday night. Can Cinderella NC State get to the final? Will UConn go back-to-back? Joel Embiid is back in the lineup for the Sixers. Will they be a threat in the East? Baseball is into its first week, and we already have the first no-hitter of 2024, a player with five home runs, and the Mets finally win a game. A sight to behold as a line brawl to start the Devils-Rangers game last night is the talk of the NHL. Stephon Diggs is out of Buffalo, headed to Houston. Is that better for the Bills or for the Texans? I've got you covered as the latest podcast is on deck. It's all coming up, but first, these messages. I'm elated and honored to welcome in a new partnership here on the podcast. Are you familiar with Olipop Soda? If you're not, well, listen up. I haven't been a soda drinker for quite some time, but when I discovered Olipop and what they're all about, I was all in. Not only is it a prebiotic soda that's good for your gut, it's non-GMO, organic, with ingredients that you can actually read. That's right, no 12 or 14 letter words that you can't pronounce. And are you worried about the dreaded high fructose corn syrup? Not here, as there's very little sugar, 4 grams per serving. And then the flavors? You have vintage cola, orange squeeze, my favorite, tropical punch, banana cream, what? Plus the classics such as root beer, lemon lime, and ginger ale, which has a better taste. How could I forget the taste? Crisp, refreshing, without feeling bloated afterward, than the usual brands that you're familiar with. Right now, you can get 15% off at checkout when you use the code SODALOVE, and I'll get a percentage of that based on your purchase. It's a win-win for both of us. Please go to drinkolipop.com and use SODALOVE for 15% off at checkout. Thanks to the good people at Olipop, and an early thank you for shopping at drinkolipop.com. J-Reels here to spend a brief moment and share a friendly reminder to please subscribe, rate, and review the podcast on whichever platform you listen to on the regular. Just so we can increase the visibility of the J-Reels podcast to those who aren't familiar with it. Leave plenty of stars, write a favorable review. It will go a long way for the curious listener looking to hop on board to get a dose of entertaining and passionate sports talk. For the visually inclined, please subscribe to my YouTube channel at J-Reels as I post daily shorts and weekly vlogs, not only delving into the world of sports, but follow me on my journey to take the podcast and channel to new heights as I provide an in-depth, behind-the-scenes look at what it takes for yours truly to produce content on a day-in, day-out, week-in, week-out basis. It goes without saying how much I truly appreciate all of your support. And without further ado, the J-Reels podcast begins in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Let's get this sports podcast party started, all right?
The J-Reels podcast.
Why don't you wait until July 1st to make an announcement? What a disgrace. He can rack up all these numbers in October, November, and December, but what really counts is let me see this in January.
The sports rebel without a pause, delivering fast-paced, jam-packed sports talk like no other.
Listen, I gotta call it as I see it. He is not a good player. I'm sick and tired of having to deal with the disappointment of this franchise. When does it stop? And yes, another winter that I can sleep in peace. Coming correct, directed, in full effect. Let's get it.
This is the J-Reels Podcast. Welcome aboard.
What is happening, my good people? Greetings. How are you? How's it going? How's everybody doing out there? What is the latest and greatest? Hope everybody's doing well, feeling fantastic, in excellent spirits. Into the swing of April as we get closer to crowning champions in college, the baseball season underway, and the playoffs on the hardwood and ice are forthcoming. Here to package it with a nice tidy bow on top is yours truly, as this is the J-Reels Podcast with your host, J-Reels. For my first timers, welcome aboard. And for those who've been banging with me going back to the very beginning, somewhere in the middle, or even as early as this past Monday, I welcome you guys and gals back. And a little bit of a late start, I'm recording this at 10:49 p.m. Yes, usually by 10:49 a.m., I'm in the middle of breaking down what has transpired over the last few days to set yourself up for a weekend. But unlike last week, where I was unable to record on a Thursday, and I did promise you on Monday that there'll be a podcast, well, it's going to be delayed. By the time you get this Friday morning, and even by the afternoon and into the weekend, you're probably thinking, who cares, J-Reels? I'm already have it downloaded and set to my device or my mobile phone, tablet, laptop, etc. But you know me, accountability, making sure I take ownership of what's going on here, and a day that, again, got out of control, but it certainly wasn't going to slow or even stop me from recording this, and at least you'll have this in the morning, depending on where you live, whether it's here in the East Coast or somewhere out in the West, or maybe even somewhere overseas for that matter. So glad to have you with me to break down everything that's happening in the world of sports. And the first thing that's going to come to mind is the Final Four, both the men's and the women's. Now, I will say this. I'm not going to go full in-depth on the women's side because to think I have not watched a ton of the games. I haven't watched even a handful of the games. And that even includes the other night where Iowa beat LSU. And, of course, that's been the big story here leading into the Final Four tomorrow, which will take place in Cleveland, home of the Cavaliers. And with Iowa and UConn, with the first game being NC State and South Carolina, and as we know, both NC State and UConn are well represented, not only in the women's Final Four, but the men's, and of course, I'll get to the men's in a moment. But I wanted to touch on the women's real quick, only because since they are starting the weekend later today, by the time you listen to this, or if you already have listened to this, you get where I'm coming from. But for Caitlin Clark to have the game of her life at the, not going to say the biggest stage, because the bigger stage will be tomorrow against UConn, Gino, Auriemma, and company. And if they do advance to play South Carolina, that's going to be it. That will certainly be getting close to the mountaintop, especially for Caitlin Clark after that performance you saw there on Monday night. 41 points, just dazzled with the passing, as well as her three-point shooting a la Steph Curry, or even if you want to take it back to Pete Maravich before the three-point line was instituted in college basketball. And Clark, she has been the story here. And as I said before, it's unfortunate that the LSU-Iowa game was not part of a semifinal as opposed to a regional final. And I understand everybody is poo-pooing or even boo-hooing the Angel Reese press conference and talking about how she's been called names and death threats and things of that nature. And I understand that it's tough for Reese to kind of depict that role, not to say that she wanted to be the villain or to have that cast upon her or her teammates and the rest of their team. But of course, dating back to last year, what we saw in the championship game and how they beat Iowa, and of course, the hands in the face where, what is that, you can't see me, displayed by Angel Reese in winning a national title. And then this go around, this was Caitlin Clark's time to deliver, time to shine, considering the entire year, breaking NCAA records, getting this deep into the brackets to the regional final, and then now to a Final Four. And right, we could talk about how the optic may not look good for Angel Reese, and I'm not going to get on her. I mean, it's easy to pound her, I'll be honest, because I know I've maybe pounded other players in the past. And right, do we really want to hear about the death threats afterwards and for her to get into that? Listen, that sadly is a part of what has transpired here over the last year for her, painting her as the bad guy, maybe to a certain extent, although it wasn't welcomed on her part, but because of her actions there in the championship game last year, that carried on to this year. And even though she had a great game, what did she score? 17 points at 20 rebounds, somewhere in that vicinity, or maybe have it flip-flopped. But nevertheless, this was Caitlin Clark's game to really get to that next level. And now that she's there, and she's going to have to go up against UConn, and yes, this isn't the UConn of years ago, still very formidable. We understand the coach, Gino Auriemma, and what he means to the women's game when it comes to college basketball. But for Caitlin Clark to get to that level, and you don't have to hear it from me. As much as I talked about it, whether it was this past Monday prior to the game against LSU or even before that, when she broke the women's record and then Pistol Pete's record, saying that if she's going to be put in that pantheon as far as the all-time greats, she has to win a title. Even Rebecca Lobo said it. And if she's going to say that, well, in order for her to be the GOAT, she's going to have to win not just one, but multiple titles. But you know what? She has to get to one before we can get to multiple. And as we know, she's going to forego her final year and get into the NBA draft, which you would think she's going to be number one chosen overall. So she's only going to have that one opportunity for her to get the brass ring this go around. And I'm sure that's the primary focus for her to get that. I'm sure all the GOAT talk may be nice, but she's probably not even thinking about that. And when you have this matchup going up against UConn, and then after that, South Carolina, who have been champions in their own right, led by the coach Dawn Staley. To me, as great as she's been and as great as she's shown there in that regional final, she's going to have to do it two more times. And I would think if she's able to win this game, I'm sure a lot of the country is going to rally around Caitlin Clark to get that championship. And even though it's not going to portray UConn or even South Carolina or NC State if they make it that far, as the potential villains. But I'm sure all of America is rooting for at least Clark to get to the final game, which will be Sunday at 3:30. Because even if you do have a clash of the big titans with South Carolina and UConn, and it's not to discount Iowa or even NC State for that matter, but we all know that America, and I would even think the sports fan who's been following this over the past year, following her trajectory this year, the records, the accolades, etc., I'm sure they're going to want an ABC ESPN, which is carrying the game. They are, fingers crossed, holding their collective breaths to make sure that after that game tomorrow night between Iowa and UConn, that they hope the Hawkeyes are victorious, because that is going to be a ginormous rating for a Sunday afternoon. And yes, you may have a couple other things to chew on, whether it's NBA, some Major League Baseball, depending on where you live. The Masters, you don't have to worry about till the week later, as the Masters will tee off a week from today down in Augusta. But that would almost be a standalone game for them. And considering what the rating that the Iowa and LSU game got, a 12.5 million, imagine what the championship game will be. And again, that's going to be ESPN, ABC, so that's going to generate a huge rating if Clark is one of the last two teams standing. So how I look at this is going to play out, I would think South Carolina is going to win just based on their recent reputation. And why not? That's not a knock on NC State. Again, I haven't followed these teams, people. I haven't watched any of these games. I'm not going to all of a sudden be a prognosticator or even be, dare I even say, an expert when it comes to women's college basketball. Of course not. As it is, I parachute with the men's game and the tournament here, not following soup to nuts, nut and bolts, day by day, getting the sleeves rolled up pretty much from January on to this point here. So I can't really give a complete analysis on how these games are going to break down. I would think that Iowa, being on this magic carpet ride and knowing that maybe Caitlin Clark cannot be stopped, she may get an opportunity to play in the championship, and I'm rooting for that game to happen. I think it'd be great for the sport. It'd be great for college basketball on the whole, and why not? If you get UConn, South Carolina, or UConn, NC State, it's going to pale in comparison about the rating and how many people are going to draw eyeballs to the sets to watch a national championship if Iowa's not there. I mean, that's all there is to it. So we shall see. I'm going to root for Iowa hard. I'm going to root for South Carolina too, because I've always loved Dawn Staley dating back to the 90s, going that far back. So I would love to see South Carolina, Iowa as the final. If it happens to be Iowa, NC State, I'm sure it's going to draw a big rating, but I would think that the college basketball fan would want to see South Carolina there. And it'd be interesting, because if NC State, the women's, were to win Friday, I'm sure that's going to trickle down to the men's, because they're going to look at that and say, well, hey, the ladies made it. Now we got to represent as an 11 seed and see if we can get to a final. Where UConn, obviously they won last year, the men Huskies, and then the lady Huskies trying to get back to a championship game. So who knows? If they do happen to win, maybe that'll add a little fuel to the UConn men's Huskies team going into the Final Four Saturday night. But let's see how it all breaks down. And I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be an exciting weekend of college basketball. And now that I pivot to the men's, and obviously we know what the storylines are. I'm sure you probably heard it a lot between Monday, once we got clear of the Sweet 16, up until now. We know about the magic carpet ride that the Wolfpack have gone throughout the course, not only in the tournament, but going back to the ACC tournament when they had to run the table, win five straight, and then here they are winning nine straight overall to get to a point where they're going to face off against Purdue. And that's going to be led by DJ Burns, who has been outstanding here, especially in the regional final against Duke. And he's going to have a unenviable task to go up against Zach Edey, one of the All-Americans in the country. And Purdue, that's another storyline where we have to look at them. First Final Four since 1980. And knowing that Coach Matt Painter has faltered here down the stretch over the last few years, especially after losing last year as a one seed, as we all know. And we've talked about the parallels and comparisons to Virginia when they lost in 2018 and then in the first round as the first team to lose in a 1-16 matchup, and then they won the national title the next year. You have to wonder if there's a little bit of pixie dust being sprinkled there in Fort Wayne, Indiana, to wonder whether or not this is Purdue's time. And this is going to be a tough task for NC State. Listen, we could talk about 1983 with what happened there with Jim Valvano going up against the mighty Houston Cougars in that final game, and the Derek Wittenberg, Lorenzo Charles dunk at the final second right at the buzzer for the Wolfpack to win the national title in really shocking fashion. And does NC State, are they going to be able to fit the glass slipper one more time to get to a national championship? I think they could be competitive, and who knows? Maybe if by any chance their tenacity and Them playing fast and loose pretty much the way they played dating back to the ACC tournament, what, about 2.5, 3 weeks ago? And the house money is all on their side. Now, they don't want to go into halftime down 41-26 because it's going to be a big hole for them to dig out of. But I would have to think that the old saying, I didn't come this far, or NC State did not come this far just to come this far. But they are going into the deep end of the pool. And for them to be able to just sustain the game, let's say with less than 10 minutes to go where they're within 6 to 8 points, that's what you're hoping for if you're a college basketball fan. You do not want to see Purdue in a track meet go up and down the court where Zach Edey, who scored 40 in the regional final against Tennessee, and for them just to kind of blitz through NC State as the clock were ready to strike 12, that would be a tough watch setting us up for the UConn-Alabama game. But I would think that the Wolfpack, and they probably heard it all week, and hopefully their coach Kevin Keats, they're not even looking towards the prognosticators or anything online, reading any press clippings. That's the last thing they want. If anything, they need to be insulated from that, because the last thing they want to hear is NC State, 83. And of course, the comparisons, they're inevitable. But again, that was 41 years ago. You cannot compare that team to this team, despite the fact that they were a big underdog going into that national championship game against Houston. But this is 2024, and this is a team that nobody expected to be here. And even though they could look at the bright lights and be in the big gym, really the big stadium that is Phoenix and Glendale, I guess it's still the University of Arizona Stadium or State Farm Stadium, whatever it is. So for NC State, I think they could be in the game, but I think Purdue's going to win. I think at some point they're going to pull away, whether it be from that second part of the second half, where let's say they're within 10 points NC State, and then all of a sudden the Boilermakers go on a run and then put the game away. And then the nightcap, Alabama, who shot their way into this Final Four thanks to Mark Sears and his 7 threes. The coach, Nate Oates, trying to do something that Nick Saban couldn't do in the semifinal this year against Michigan, beat them to go to a national championship game. And to think, a lot of parallels. When we talked about NC State, the men's and women, same for UConn. Alabama, the football team, as we know, made it to the Final Four. Now you have the basketball team. And the one thing about Alabama is that they can shoot the basketball. And one thing, if you're UConn, and we understand they're a Swiss Army knife based on the way they defend, they can score. They don't have the same scoring prowess that they had last year with Jordan Hawkins and guys like that that were in the lineup, even Sonogo and other players who have made the trip from the NBA draft into the association. So for Alabama, I think if they're going to win this game, they're going to have to pretty much stick to that same recipe. Try to get as many threes, try to shoot anywhere between 10 to 15 makes, not shoot 15 threes for the game, because if they have a bad shooting night, unlike what you saw there against Clemson in the regional final, that's another game that could go awry quickly for the Crimson Tide. And UConn, who has not broken out a sweat in any of these tournament games that they faced this year, and even going back to last year's run to a national championship. Is that trend going to continue? Or will this be, I'm not going to say a nail biter, but will it come down to maybe 5 minutes to go, 7 minutes to go, to where Alabama could be in a slight lead, or maybe not that far behind, where UConn could be a little bit tight? Because we have not seen UConn in that pressure-packed situation to where the game could be at hand, to where a bad pass, an errant shot, a touch foul, ticky-tack, that could go Alabama's way. UConn hasn't had that. And even though they have a lot of toughness, and they do have that championship DNA and medal, as I like to call, but we have not seen them be in the crux of a game where it's tied with about 2 minutes to go. Now, do I think that's going to happen? I can't say. And even though everybody's hoping for Purdue and UConn, the two number one seeds, clash of the Titans, which I think would be fascinating. And even though Alabama and NC State are live dogs, although I think Alabama probably has a better shot to beat UConn than NC State to beat Purdue, but I still see UConn prevailing. And not to say that it's going to be a cakewalk, but I could see Alabama maybe getting off to a fast start. UConn, almost like a boxer, trying to feel them out a little bit, and maybe they fall behind. Next thing you know, they could be trailing at halftime. But UConn has that savvy. They know how to win, and they have the players that have been there, done that, and I could see them winning when it's all said and done. And then obviously when we get to Monday's podcast, we'll break it all down. Obviously the Final Four, and then we'll preview the national championship game. And even by then, we'll talk about the women's game, obviously because the championship game, as we talked about, was on Sunday. But other than that, that's what I have. And it's been, I'm not going to say it's been an overall great tournament. It's kind of hard to base that because you would need to have a lot more buzzer beaters. You would need to have games that are really white knucklers. And you've had some in the opening couple of rounds where you saw Kentucky lose and teams like that, even Arizona. But for the Sweet 16, and yes, you did have some riveting games. Obviously, UConn and Purdue, although Purdue and Tennessee was very good, but it didn't come down to the final seconds of the game. We can only hope that the Final Four will provide a lot more intrigue, even some drama, and a lot of tension. We don't want to see, with 9.5 minutes to go, Purdue up 61-48, or 61-40. Let me make it a little bit more of a deficit there. And the same for UConn, who, as I mentioned, and similar to Purdue, although they've had been a little bit more battle-tested here, but they pretty much have gone away with these games, whether it's beaten Gonzaga, whether it's beaten Tennessee, etc. So we shall see. We'll break it all down come Monday. Looking forward to this weekend, not only in Cleveland for the women's game, but also in Phoenix for the men's, which will tip off Saturday, was it, 6:09? And then the nightcap at 8:49. Let me see what else I have. That will do it for the college basketball. Now let me pivot to the NBA. And the association had a big player come back this week, and a one Joel Embiid, after his absence, hurting his knee out in Golden State to where he needed surgery. I believe it was a meniscus. Came back in the lineup, what was it, Tuesday against the Oklahoma City Thunder. Now, they didn't play SGA in the game, and therefore, they were able to squeak by and win a game there to kind of get a good sense, good feeling, where Joel Embiid scored 24 points. And the big question is going to be whether or not he's going to have enough of a time frame over the last five games of the season to ramp up his basketball activities, game time, game shape, whatever you want to call it, for the Sixers to make a run to a conference final. And the reason why I say conference final is because whenever Joel Embiid is suited up in a Sixer uniform, his teams have never gone past a conference semis to get to a chance to win an Eastern Conference. He came close. Remember that year, 2019, where Kawhi Leonard, with four bounces of the ball up in Toronto in a game seven, where it went through the net in just devastating fashion. And then what we saw there in the bubble, which maybe you could count or discount, when they lost to the Celtics in five in the second round. Then you had a scenario where they lost to the Hawks. They lost three home games to Atlanta and Ben Simmons. We know about that whole debacle. Then you could look back to 2 years ago, losing to the Heat in five. Last year, had a 3-2 series lead where they beat the Celtics in a game five up in Boston before Embiid and Harden disappeared in the fourth quarter, where Jason Tatum was awful in the first three quarters, but he came to life at the end of the fourth, and they brought the series back to Boston in a game seven. And all they did was the Celtics and Jason Tatum scored 51 points and blew out the Sixers pretty much by the half, and they went off into the spring and summer quietly as a mouse. And now here they are. Big time expectations coming into this year. I know a lot of uncertainty with a new coach, Nick Nurse, who had won a championship in Toronto, ironically, against the Raptors, the series that I just mentioned a couple of seconds ago. And then you had the James Harden fiasco where they traded him before the start of the season. And Embiid, who was pretty much in MVP form dating back to last year, averaging 35 points a game. And then he gets barreled into, I believe, by Jonathan Kuminga in the Bay Area to where he crumpled to the floor. And then the first time you saw him was Tuesday night after being on the shelf a little over 2 months. Quite frankly, I don't think they may have one series win in them. And as it is, if they finish in the playing scenario where they're in the 7-8 game, and if they lose that game, although they do have that safety net to play that second game, but if you're the Sixers, I don't think you're going to be long for this postseason. Now, if Embiid was, now I'm sure he's as close to 100%, maybe he's about 85-90%, I don't know. But even with that injury, and I'm sure psychologically, and even mentioned that this is war on him more mentally than anything, knowing how he was going to be able to rumble up and down the court. Obviously, he needs to cut, pivot, make moves, etc. And for Embiid, as great of a talent as he is, the reigning MVP, and with the Sixers, I'm not going to say they're in disarray, but not really getting their footing ever since Embiid had to sit out due to this ailment, and him coming back, although it's a huge boost and a breath of fresh air, I don't think it's going to be enough for them to get on a run in the Eastern Conference. And speaking of runs in the Eastern Conference, the Knicks were dealt a big blow as Julius Randle, who was rehabbing a shoulder which was not cooperating and will have to go under the knife to get surgery. So that means his season is done. And the Knicks, that is also another interesting angle, because if Randle were to come back, let's just say, and I understand it's moot right now, but a lot of people thought that with a healthy Randle and OG Anunoby to go along with Jalen Brunson and the Villanova Knicks, as we know, the Josh Harts, the Dante DiVincenzos, etc., that the Knicks could actually make a run to a conference final. But as of right now, Julius Randle, listen, I'm not trying to make him out to be a top 10, top 15 player in the sport, but we know that he's had his troubles in the postseason, dating back to that Hawks series, which he shot terribly, and even last year in Miami, not great. And for Randle, although he can put up points and is a guy that does add a little bit of swag and even some physicality too, even though this isn't the NBA 20, 30 years ago, but without him in the lineup, that's a huge blow. And you don't know about Anunoby, who is also a critical piece, who can score, but is also there more to be the guy that's going to lock down the other wingman on the opposition, and a guy that can be that two-way player that you desperately need once you get to April, May, and June. And who knows with Anunoby's status, who's had that elbow issue, and I believe he's had a couple of other maladies that he's had to deal with, but mainly the elbow. And if you're a Knicks fan, I'm sure you're just keeping your fingers crossed and just hoping that you could just kind of piecemeal this together to get to maybe even a four seed, so at least you could host a first round of a playoff series. I know you want to get as high as three, although the Knicks did win tonight by beating the Sacramento Kings, but they did come into this game tonight in a three-game losing streak, so they're able to snap that, and currently they are, what, tied with Orlando at the present moment and a half game behind Cleveland, who Cleveland has not played well here during this recent stretch. And the Knicks, if they could get to three and maybe play Indiana in the first round, and then they would avoid the Celtics altogether, I'm sure they want to get out of that 4-5 scenario and maybe try to catapult themselves to three if Tom Thibodeau and company are kind of looking into their crystal ball to hope and wonder whether or not they're going to get to that point before we get to the end of next week when the season will be completed. Besides that, let's see what else I got here. NBA. I mean, I could go through some of the standings in the races if we've talked about it. It seems like time after time. Yeah, I'll get into Rondo and his retirement. I'll get into that afterwards. Other than that, I'll take a look at the schedule too to see where we stack up. We got some big games coming up this weekend and even into next week, but just from now until Monday when we reconvene then. You still have that three-legged race there in the West, which we'll certainly continue to follow, where Minnesota and Denver are tied. Oklahoma City is just a game behind them for the top spot. We've talked about ad infinitum about the Lakers and Warriors, who I believe they'll play next week. And the Warriors, I believe, are playing Houston tonight. Let me look at that, because that was a huge game. And I talked about this on Monday, people. Check those receipts. Houston had an 11-game winning streak that was snapped there over the weekend. And you kind of wonder whether or not that was going to be, I don't want to say a death knell, but you weren't going to run the table to win 16-17 in a row to end the season. So by them losing, and the Warriors are actually been playing pretty well, Warriors currently in the middle of a winning streak themselves, five in a row. So the Rockets, although they have gained ground and came as close to being one game behind the Warriors, but with Golden State continuing to win, and you knew that the Rockets were going to lose at some point, and now that they have, they've been mired in a three-game losing streak, and let me see whether or not that they did play tonight, because if that's the case, then you may have a scenario where Houston has literally run out of gas. And as I look at the schedule for, maybe that's tomorrow night, let me just take a quick look here. Golden State at Dallas. Maybe that was a game last night. And here I got my days mixed up. Yeah, if Golden State last night, maybe it's two nights ago. Here I am just trying to look through this on a whim. Yeah, Golden State. No, they actually play tonight. My eyes are deceiving me. Maybe I need some glasses. In fact, Golden State, they put the dagger through the Rockets for sure. 133-110 was your final. Steph with 29 points. And I knew that they were playing. I didn't know if it was last night or tonight. And with Golden State at Dallas, obviously, this is the first end of a back-to-back. But to me, that's it for the Rockets. They're going to be done as Golden State definitely put the stake through their heart. And a great run by Houston and a great year with Ime Udoka and that young team. Mix of veterans there with Dylan Brooks, as we know, and even Fred VanVleet. But Houston, they could build off of this into next year. And you would think Golden State's going to be safe to get that 10th spot and play the Lakers sometime in a couple of weeks. And as far as your schedule the rest of the way, or at least until Monday, Sacramento at Boston. You have Golden State at Dallas, as I mentioned. Minnesota at Phoenix. I know Minnesota and Denver, I believe they play next week. So that's a game we'll certainly have to keep our fingers on the pulse. Know the big games on Saturday. Sunday, you have Cleveland at LA. That's the Clippers. Houston, Dallas, Portland, Boston. Nothing really to New Orleans at Phoenix. That could be a big game. Knicks at Milwaukee. One to pay attention to. Then you have Minnesota at LA to play the Lakers. But Phoenix, when we take a look at the West there real quick, and I know I talked about the top, but the middle part of that bracket, Phoenix right now, they are currently in the sixth seed. They moved up, and if they were to stay there, they would avoid the playing scenario altogether. They're currently tied with the Pelicans for seventh, although, or I should say for sixth, but New Orleans is currently seventh. Sacramento is just a game behind both New Orleans and Phoenix, so that could bode big time for Phoenix if they could kind of just hang in there to avoid the whole playing scenario. And I think that'd be good for the league, because think about it. Bad enough you're going to lose either LeBron or Curry at some point, and you're going to lose them in the first game, because the 9 and 10, whomever wins that game, they will advance, but then they'll have to beat the winner of, as of right this moment, New Orleans and Sacramento on the road. Now, if Phoenix does fall down to the 7 or 8 seed, then in all likelihood, they would have to go to Phoenix to play that game, and you may have a shot where either LeBron, Durant, or Booker could be out of the postseason. So that's something to keep in mind as we get to the final, what, 5-6 games of the season. And then the East, just like I mentioned, I know Miami's just hovering there, a half game behind Indiana. I don't even know how much they're really anticipating trying to get a 6th seed or above. Remember, they made it to the play-in scenario last year, and they survived that second game after losing to Atlanta in the first round, or the first round of the play-in tournament, and then they were able to just slink by the Bulls before going on a run of their own and making it to an NBA final. So that's what you have with the NBA. We'll continue to see what's going to happen there as we get to really the last 10 days of the season, because I believe the season ends a week from this coming Sunday, and then you have the play-in games Tuesday, Wednesday, and then the real bulk of the playoffs will start 2 weeks from this coming Saturday. And then Rajon Rondo in the All the Smoke podcast came out and said that he's done, he's retired, which the only reason why I bring him up, being a Celtic fan and watching a good bulk of the early part of his career and then bounced around a million teams, played on that 2020 Laker team. I know it's been amidst some controversy off the court with some issues in regards to family, which I won't get into, but Rondo, a cerebral player, a guy that is almost like a coach on the court, kind of sees things develop before they actually happen, had big time numbers, especially during the era of the big three. And if you want to add him as the fourth element of that Ray Allen, Kevin Garnett, and Paul Pierce puzzle when they won a title in 2008. So at 38 years of age, a bunch of teams, not a Hall of Famer. So for those who are going to think, hey, does Rondo have a shot? Considering he's won two titles, played on the Lakers, Celtics, etc. I don't think that's going to be the case. But for Rondo, a very good career. And for him to hang it up, I know unceremoniously, because it's not as if he was playing or has not been in the league, I guess, for a couple of years. Maybe the last time he played was in 2022. As if you're watching me on YouTube, I'm just trying to deal with this power cord here that's just hanging by a thread. So here, improvising as I speak, for Rondo, congratulations to him. Very good career, not a Hall of Fame. I understand all these guys get in, it seems like, for whatever the reason. And although, one more time, very good career. He put up very good numbers, had a lot of triple-doubles, but certainly not among the pantheon of one of the top point guards to ever play the game. So now let me pivot to the NHL. And last night, it's interesting. I didn't talk about this on Monday's podcast as I lace up my skates here. Last night, Madison Square Garden, you had fight night. And no, there was not a boxing match. It wasn't an Ali Frazier bout, although you had five of them at one shot. But this Ranger Devil, to me, it's not much of a rivalry. And I understand they've had their moments over the decades. You want to talk about that 94 conference final, which was one of the great Game 7s that you'll ever see. Of course, the famous Stephan Marteau goal when the Rangers went on to the Stanley Cup final and won that elusive Stanley Cup that they hadn't since 1940. Actually, this is going to be the 30th year, 30th anniversary of that Stanley Cup victory this coming spring. And then for them to play in the playoffs last year where the Devils did win in 7. And then you also had just, what, a couple of months ago, or not even, 6 weeks ago, where Matt Rempe elbowed one of the players of the Devils to where he got a match penalty, game misconduct. And then that precipitated a trade by the Devils to bring in Curtis McDermott from the Avalanche. And then just a few weeks ago at Madison Square Garden, where McDermott tried to engage Rempe into a fight after he elbowed, I believe it was Jonas Siegenthaler. And Siegenthaler was crumbled to the ice. McDermott tried to get after him. Obviously, was broken up. You had Rempe just trying to wave him off back into the locker room, which now was brewing over these last 3 weeks. And although it didn't get a lot of fanfare, and although it didn't get a lot of hype, especially here in the tri-state area, I get it. Baseball's just starting. The Yankees are off to a good start. Hockey right now, although the Rangers have the best record in the sport, tops in points, etc. But last night, because of the way the sport has been, although it has gotten a lot of juice with Rempe being in the league and a lot of the fights that he's had since he's been in the NHL for the last 6-7 weeks, but last night, it all broke loose. And to see that reminded me of that line brawl that took place, I believe it was in 2012, which was highlighted by that Brandon Prust, Cam Jansen's fight right at the start of the game, and that was, what, John Tortorella with Alain Vigneault, and they were going at it on the benches. And you saw that again last night with Travis Green, the coach of the Devils, and Peter Laviolette, the Ranger coach, and for McDermott and Rempe to go at it. And to me, it was a draw. Listen, I hate it with the shields, and I get it. This is how the league is. They adopted the shields for everybody in the league, especially, what was it, except for the ones who've been grandfathered in, a la the Ryan Reeves and the Matt Martins of the world. But just to see the shields and you see Rempe's knuckles all cut up because all he's doing is punching plastic. Same for McDermott for that matter, although it looked like he did get a shot on Rempe's lip as he had a bloody lip going off the ice. But it was just appalling to me to see a lot. I don't want to say a lot, but to see quite a few remarks online. And I understand people say, J-Reels, why are you going to social media? It's a cesspool, this and that. But you know, once it came out, I had to chime in and throw in my 2 cents, especially on Instagram. Forget about Twitter. So I went to Hockey Fights, who has an excellent handle and profile. They pretty much put up all the fights on their feed. And for them to, and I didn't watch it from there, I watched it from a highlight on YouTube, but for them to put that out there and just to read some of the comments, and whether it's from young people, even old people, you know, Rempe's a bum, he's only good for 5 minutes a game, blah, 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 all the penalty minutes, it's a sideshow, it's this, he shouldn't even belong in the National Hockey League. Well, this kid is actually injected life, and I don't want to belabor posts or thoughts that I had going back several weeks. But all I'm going to say is this, people. When everybody was on the ice and McDermott and Rempe were lined up side by side, and you already knew it was going to go down, and the whole building knew it was going to go down, did anybody run for the exits? Did anybody turn around, turn their back to the ice and not watch? Did anybody boo as if to say, oh, this is terrible. Oh, to see these fights, it's a disgrace. It's a black eye in the sport. Oh, come on. Did you hear any of that? And when it was all said and done, did everybody or anyone, were they silent? Were they sitting on their hands? Did you hear crickets in the crowd? No, you heard roars. Now, this isn't 1979. It's not 1989. And it's not even 1999. I understand. But for the one moment in the sun, and really, since Rempe's been in this league, he has given the sport, and I don't care what Gary Bettman will tell you, if you give him truth serum, he's loving this. But of course, he's not going to use that tact. He's not going to come out to say that, oh yeah, this is great. We certainly applaud what Rempe's done, or we certainly condone what's happening on the ice. Uh-uh. They're not going to say that. The fans like us are going to say that. And to have the other fans out there that are going to be high and mighty to think that, oh, this is a dating us back to the Neanderthal days of the NHL. Oh, it put hockey back 40 years. Oh, this is terrible, blah, blah. Then you know what? You don't know anything about hockey. And I'll just leave it at that. I could just ramble about this for days, as you well know. Whether it's your first time, you got a little bit of a taste. If you want to go back in the archives, you'll see it headlined on some of my posts, on some of the podcast headlines. All you got to do is just date back to February 19th. So you don't have to go far to dig out a lot of the things that I had to say about Rempe, about fighting in the league, and what happened there last night at the Garden, which was just a sight to behold. And I wish we saw more of that, because the players need to police one another and to send those messages and to do that. Not guys who are wannabe tough guys behind shields and want to swing sticks and spear and headhunt and things of that nature. We need tough guys in the league. End of story. But as far as the NHL overall on a whole, Rangers, as I talked about on Monday, are they the best team in the league right now? They have 106 points, as we know, 51 wins. And if I'm a Ranger fan, I don't want to have that President's Trophy. It's almost a curse to win that thing, because generally the team who wins the President's Trophy does not only win a Stanley Cup, but they barely even get into the Stanley Cup, meaning that they qualify to be an Eastern Conference representative. So Rangers, and even the Dallas Stars for that matter, they've also been torrid too. They're just 1 point behind the Rangers for that President's Trophy, which I would think if you're a Ranger fan, hey, maybe Dallas could continue to steamroll here, as they've won 8 in a row. And not much separation with Colorado, because they've been on their heels here over the last few weeks. But as we get down to the final 6 games of the season, this is what you have here, people. And in one big giant nutshell, I'll look at also the games of this weekend too as well. But when we take a look at the conferences in the East, we know it's going to be Boston. Florida has not played well as of late. And you kind of wonder, maybe they're hitting that lull where maybe it's a good time for them to do so, because Florida, who has played very well for about 3 months' time up until this recent stretch of about 10, 12 games, and for Florida, who, as we all know, went to a Stanley Cup final last year as an 8 seed, and I'm sure a lot of expectations this year to go on another deep run, maybe even get back to a Cup final. Right now, they are currently 4 points behind the Bruins in the Atlantic Division. Then Toronto is just 6 points behind them, so they'll have enough cushion there. And then after that, you have Tampa, who's 3 points, or excuse me, 2 points behind Toronto, who they could leapfrog them if Toronto falters here down the stretch. But Tampa has the first wild card spot, excuse me. And looky here, the one team that currently, by the slimmest of margins, I might add, who has the 2 seed in the wild card in the East, the Islanders. And I don't know if they're going to make it this year. Now, remember, they needed help last year by Pittsburgh losing to Chicago, and then they beat Montreal that final game before they got in. And they got in as a 7 seed because, remember, I believe Florida needed to win that last game to get the 7 seed, and they lost. But they were able to get into the postseason as it was. But right now, the Islanders, could you imagine a first-round Islander-Ranger series? I could, but that could be ugly quick, because the Rangers and Islanders are light years ahead of one another. I understand rivalry, etc. And think about this. They still have 2 more games left before the end of the season. So that would be interesting if the Islanders were to, let's say they split those 2 games. But if they somehow make it into the postseason, knowing that they're going to play the Rangers from February 18th. That was the first time they played them. And then remember, they also played on St. Paddy's Day. They're going to have played them 4 times before the playoffs if they do match up in the first round. So keep that in mind, as that could be a cauldron of emotions heading into that first round if the Islanders do qualify for the playoffs. And then you have Washington, just a point behind them. Actually, Detroit and Washington, 1 point behind the Islanders. And then you have the Penguins, who have played pretty well here. They won 3 in a row, actually beat the Rangers the other night. I believe it was last night. No, 2 nights ago. And then you have the Penguins, who are still within earshot, just 2 points behind them. And then after that, it's Buffalo, and everybody else is kaput. Dallas, Colorado, Winnipeg, who finally snapped that winning streak, and they've actually won 2 in a row. So you think that they should be in good stead to keep in that 3 seed to avoid Nashville leapfrogging them to get the 3 seed, because Nashville has the number 1 spot in the wild card. The Kings have the 2 spot. They are 5 points ahead of the Blues. They should be fine. And they also have a game in hand with St. Louis, so they should be fine and home free to get into the postseason. And then you have Vancouver, Edmonton, and Vegas. Those are your top 3 seeds. And maybe there's an outside shot that Vegas could overtake Edmonton to get home ice in the first round. Right now, Vegas would play Edmonton on the road the first 2 games. And you know, I have you all covered here, people, as we get down the stretch of the season. And as far as the schedule upcoming, I believe the Islanders and Rangers, they played a 9th and the 13th. Now, tomorrow, Philadelphia, Buffalo. All right, Pittsburgh at Washington. That's a huge game tomorrow. No, that was tonight, in fact, was it? Yeah, so Pittsburgh, they were able to help the Islanders in that cause because they beat the Capitals tonight. In Pittsburgh, again, they've won three in a row. They beat the Rangers, Devils, and now Washington here during this latest stretch. Boston beat Carolina, so that helps the Rangers there as far as the Metropolitan goes. And the Islanders win in Columbus tonight. So that also put them in the second wild card spot as of right this moment. Then you have tomorrow, let's see, Washington, Carolina, Colorado at Edmonton. These are games that matter. Tampa at Pittsburgh Saturday. Florida at Boston. That's a big game to see if Florida's going to have any shot to win the Atlantic. Dallas, Chicago, Winnipeg. I'm trying to go just through the games of note. Nashville plays the Islanders on the island Saturday. Vancouver, LA Saturday night. Sunday, not much there. Nashville, New Jersey. So I guess Nashville's in town to play both of those teams. Islanders and Rangers will play Tuesday night at UBS. So that's going to have playoff atmosphere big time. That's what you have there for your weekend. Not a lot of big games NHL-wise to really sink our teeth into. But that's what you have with the NHL. Now, let me turn my attention to baseball as I want to try to knock this out here in one tidy hour. Baseball, it's been a crazy opening week. 1 week ago today, the season, the curtain raised on the Major League Baseball season. And as I pull up the MLB stuff, what you have here to date, you already had a no-hitter thrown as early as Monday. And if the name Ronel Blanco doesn't ring a bell, well, now he does because he's the Houston Astro pitcher who threw a no-hitter Monday night against the Toronto Blue Jays and was the earliest point of the season for a pitcher to throw a no-hitter. I believe the earliest was, and this is off the top of my head, Jack Morris, 1984, when he was a member of the Tigers, and he no-hit the White Sox at the old Comiskey Park. And I believe that was the earliest a no-hitter had been thrown. And here it is, Blanco, in his eighth career start, throws a no-hitter to snap the four-game losing streak of the Astros heading into this week after getting broomed by the Yankees at Minute Maid. So that was your early story from the beginning of the week. And then as the week went on, Mookie Betts, five home runs already to start off his year, and he may have tacked on another. I'll double-check that. But for Betts to get off to that torrid start and kind of overshadow a little bit, not that he's doing it intently, of course, but Shohei Ohtani, who finally hit his first home run of the year a couple of nights ago, or maybe it was actually last night, because now I'm already into Tuesday night. I'm not in my morning mode where I could kind of pivot and move around here. But for Betts, five homers, 11 RBIs. He's off to a .485 batting average start. And even with Ohtani not getting off to the best of starts for him, and the Dodgers currently 7-2 after sweeping the Giants. So they are off and running here in the early part of this Major League Baseball season. Then you have the Yankees, who were 5-0 going into the game Tuesday night before Zach Gallen and a couple other pitchers shut them down to win 7-0. And they had a big win yesterday in extra innings. So now they have their home opener tomorrow against the Toronto Blue Jays. And I'm sure it's going to be just a big celebration, although it's going to be 49 degrees and cloudy. And the weather in the Northeast has been abysmal. So I'm sure it's going to be packed at the gills tomorrow. Yankee fans anticipating a big year and a big start. And listen, we've seen this. And I don't want to come across throwing cold water. Everybody knows I get it. Yankee, anti-Yankee that I am 100%. But remember 2 years ago, they started off 51-18 and 61-23. And how did their season end? Now they went to an ALCS, I understand. But as we all know, it's not how you start, it's how you finish. And the Yankees have gotten off to a tremendous start. And this is with Nestor Cortes, a guy who had success 2 years ago, was an all-star, has been abominable in his first two starts. But the Yankees have been able to avert any type of pitching woes from their starting rotation. I know Marcus Stroman pitched well, and Carlos Rodon, not great, but gave you a good effort there yesterday, even though he got a no decision. But the Yankees with Soto getting off to a hot start. Same for Anthony Volpe. I know Aaron Judge is really, I think all the good fat pitchers have gone to Soto in the early part of the season as opposed to Judge because they are certainly pitching around him. He's batting, what, a buck and a quarter? So the Yankees, again, they'll have their home opener tomorrow. But break up the Mets. I talked about it earlier on my YouTube channel at JReels. Now, On Monday, after they got swept by the Brewers, I said, with the Tigers coming in, and not to say that they were world beaters, could they leave Citi Field 1-5, or dare I even say 0-6? Well, guess what, people? Because they didn't play Tuesday or Wednesday night because of rain, they had to squeeze in a doubleheader, old-fashioned style, not a day-night doubleheader. They lost the first game 6-3 in extra innings, similar to the way they lost extra innings the other night against the Tigers, where they went no score into the, I guess it was into the 10th before the Tigers scored 5 runs. So they lost in extras, and then they were losing 1-0 going into the 7th inning where they were getting no hit. And Harrison Bader got a base hit in the 7th inning to break the Mets off that snide. And then in the 9th inning at 1-0, Pete Alonso, it's a home run to tie. And then Tyrone Taylor, who gets the game-winning hit to at least salvage this homestand. They go to Cincinnati at least feeling a little bit better about themselves and avoid just a flat-out catastrophe to start their season 0-6. The first time they started 0-5 since the 2005 season, so they were able to avert that 0-6 start. And where they go from here, who knows? I couldn't even tell you. I think it could be a long season for this team. And granted, it's only 6 games. I know there's still 156 more to go. And just like I talked about, right? It's not how you start, it's how you finish. The Mets started off 14-7 last year, and how did their season end up? Maybe this will be a reversal of fortune. I hope that's the case. I hope I'm right in a sense where they can turn it around, but with very suspect starting pitching and an anemic offense that were one hit on opening day. They were one hit for 7 innings, really for 8 innings going into the ninth before Alonso tied the game, and then Taylor was your hero. But I'll just leave it at that when it comes to the Metropolitans, because of course I could ramble about them from here until eternity. But your games this weekend in the sport, as I'll go through a schedule real quick. We know about what's happening with the New York teams. I'm sure you got some home openers. I know the Angels will open up their season as they were on the road to start in Baltimore and Miami, as they'll have the Red Sox come in. The Red Sox, they're on the West Coast this whole trip. Remember, they started in Seattle, went to Oakland, and now they're going to go to Anaheim to complete this long road trip. You have Baltimore and Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh 5-1, good start. Baltimore, we know, we think that it's going to have a big season. Arizona, Atlanta, the defending NL champs going to the ATL. Houston at Texas, a rematch of the ALCS of last year. Then you have Seattle at Milwaukee, Tampa, Colorado, Dodgers facing the Cubs. And those are pretty much a series of note that we could discuss as we get into this series, or into this weekend, excuse me. Cleveland, Minnesota, Miami's at St. Louis. Miami off to an 0-7 start. Did they win today? No, they are 0-8, the Miami Marlins. A team that made it to the postseason last year, and give them credit under Skip Schumacher, but boy, 0-8, here I am complaining about the Mets going off to a possible 0-6 start. Marlins, who were swept to start the year against the Pirates and then swept by the Anaheim Angels, and now have lost the first game in St. Louis. And let me tell you this, people. They go to St. Louis to have an off day tomorrow before playing the back two of that series. And then who's the next series after that? They come to the Bronx to play the Yankees. So who knows? They could probably go home with 1 win, maybe 2 at best, or could go back to Florida, which I would think. I don't know if they're on an extended road trip. You would think they're going to be on a 6-game road trip, but they may be going back home without a win. And boy, tough times in Florida there for the Marlins, off to a brutal start. So that's what I have with the baseball. And then to wrap up with some NFL, and I know the big story yesterday was Stephon Diggs, as I put on my helmet and shoulder pads. Diggs, the controversial figure that he is, we know he's talented as can be. And even with the way things have transpired for him over the last couple of years, whether it was his antics there during the divisional round game against the Bengals, not this past season, the season prior, and skipping out of the locker room, not even facing the media. And then this year with the big pass drop toward the end of that game against Kansas City, again in the divisional round, not meeting the media, going off into the night, and not facing the music for that big drop that could have set him up, not only just in field goal range, and as we know, Tyler Bass missed the field goal to tie the game at that point, but who knows, maybe they could have punched it into the end zone. I get it, they probably would have left some time on the clock for Mahomes, but still, we'll never know about that. But Diggs with that big drop, and we know how talented he is, but he can be a malcontent, gets traded from the Bills to the Houston Texans, and this is twofold, because I think this is a good trade for both teams, and not because of the picks that the Buffalo Bills got back, and they only got a second round pick for next year in the 2025 draft. So it's not even going to this year's draft. But I think the Texans, to have a veteran presence, a guy who is a very good receiver, as I mentioned, he's a 1A. I don't know how, if he's really a 1, despite the fact that he was a first-team All-Pro a couple of years back. But for Diggs and the baggage that he brings, young coach, young quarterback, you would think he's going to be on his P's and Q's to try to navigate his veteran presence onto that team. But who knows how much of a leash D'Amico Ryans will give Diggs. And I'm sure he's going to give him plenty of opportunities to thrive in H-Town, to be that guy for C.J. Stroud, even though they have a guy like Nico Collins who has come into being a very good receiver in his own right. But for Diggs, let's see. His is his next stop on his football journey. Minnesota ended not too good there. And now same here with Buffalo. Let's see what happens in Houston. And I think it's good for Buffalo because they had to get rid of Diggs. They don't have to worry about the circus that is Stephon Diggs anymore. And I believe there was a tweet on Monday or Tuesday where somebody brought up whether or not that he was a top flight wide receiver. And I think he answered back saying, "You sure?" And for me, I don't think that's the reason why the Bills shipped him to the Texans. But maybe they just had enough. They realized that with the draft upcoming and maybe they could get a receiver. Now, I'm sure they're going to be drafting somewhere in the 20s unless they have another. And I don't have the draft order in front of me. And of course, the draft is still what? I believe it's 3 weeks from tonight, the 25th. So I'm sure maybe there could be a deal consummated between now and then. Maybe they can move up in the draft to get one of the young wide receivers. I don't know if they're going to get the Rome Odunze's or the Marvin Harrison Jr.'s. They're going to be too rich for any team's blood to move up that high. But I'm sure they could get another one of the Washington wide receivers or another guy that could be on their radar that could drop to them or maybe be in that range. And they're going to need another target because Gabe Davis, he left, I believe. I don't even know where he went to off the top of my head. I think he went to Jacksonville. I may be wrong on that. I'll look that up. But for their wideouts, they do not have a plethora of any receivers that are going to be of note other than the tight ends. And we know that they both have the two-headed monster of Dawson Knox and Dalton Schultz. Well, Dawson Kincaid, I got him mixed up with the other tight end who's in Houston. So, yes, he did go to the Jaguars, Gabe Davis, and signed there right at the start of the new NFL season. So, I think for Buffalo, it was good to get rid of him. They needed to start over, bring in some new blood at the wideout position. And for the Texans, I also think that's a plus. So, kudos to both of those teams in getting the player that maybe could be a big piece of the puzzle for Houston and getting rid of a player that wore out his welcome there in Buffalo. Now, I don't know what's gone on with the NFL here over the last week or so, but it has been very bizarre. I'm going to save this one for last as far as Vontae Davis, and that's just a terrible story. But when we look at what has gone on, whether it's Rashee Rice driving a Lamborghini in which he admitted that he did so on a Dallas highway, which caused a 6-car accident. Does anybody know about the name Henry Ruggs? I mean, this is just a terrible judgment. A guy, I'm sure, on top of the world, winning a Super Bowl, got a Lambo, he's flossing, and that occurs, and I don't believe anybody was seriously hurt. Thankfully, nobody perished in this accident, but just a terrible job by Rice trying to weave, and listen, I don't know if he was weaving in and out of traffic, but if you're driving a Lamborghini, you're not going 45 miles an hour. So he has to face the music there. Who knows what is going to happen if there was any, I don't know if there was any blood in his system. I don't believe that that's the case, but he has cooperated with the authorities. He turned himself in, and let's just hope that he wasn't under any influence because that will certainly be just a terrible optic for the Kansas City Chief wide receiver. Then you had Cam Sutton, who was making out to be like Harrison Ford in the movie The Fugitive, where he had this alleged domestic violence incident to the point where he had left the Lions practice facility at one point. Then he was in South Florida. Then he was on the lam. Then next thing you know, he turned himself in after this wild goose chase. And even though the Lions already had released him, based on the news that had come out about this alleged domestic abuse, strangulation, all these accusations. And Sutton was a guy who played on my team for many years, the Steelers, and had a very good year with the Lions. As we know, went to the NFC Championship game. And now you would think that his career is over in not only just Detroit, but in the NFL altogether. So that's number two. And then the third thing, and I understand he hasn't played in a while. And I know the lasting memory that you have of Vontae Davis, him in a Buffalo Bill uniform in a game, I believe it was against the Indianapolis Colts, where he just quit at halftime. Took off the uniform, walked out of the stadium, and that's it, without a notice. And Vontae Davis, who was known for that video with the Hard Knocks HBO when he was a member of the Miami Dolphins, when they traded him to Indianapolis and they informed him of the trade and obviously had not played well and therefore made him expendable. And for him to be shipped where he was just in shell shock, you could just tell by the look on his face. And the first thing he said was, "Can I call my grandmother?" And for Davis, who played a long time in the NFL, his brother was Vernon Davis, the longtime tight end of the San Francisco 49ers, found dead in his home, South Florida, a few days ago at the age of 35. Now, who knows what has happened here? I'm not going to speculate. I'm not going to even think of the worst. We're just going to have to wait to get more reports from the coroners, from whatever medical people that are going to be involved in this, to do an autopsy to find out how this caused the death. Now, there was no foul play involved, which was a good thing, but sadly, he has transitioned. He is no longer here, and 35 years of age, man. You just only hope that whatever happened, it wasn't anything self-inflicted or something. Who knows? We just won't know. And if anything does come out in the days, weeks to come, I'll be sure to bring it up, but just a terrible story. Thoughts, prayers, and condolences go out to the Davis family, the Dolphins, Colts, the NFL. Again, just another terrible story to hear about a player who just retired. I know, unceremoniously, and certainly doesn't look good when you leave your teammates behind, but you know what? Maybe he was going through some mental health issues, which obviously has been prevalent in the NFL over the years with CTE, concussions, etc. But may he rest in peace. And one more time, just an awful story. And sorry to land the plane on that note, people, but that's what I have for you. Thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you so much for being patient, for recording this here as it's a shade before midnight and I got to get out of here because it's getting late. And one more time, thank you so much for stopping by, for listening to what it is I have to say about what goes on in the world of sports. If you haven't done so, please subscribe, rate, and review. Throw me a few stars, write a review. I'd greatly appreciate it. Also, hit me up on any of my socials. Follow me on my YouTube channel at JReels. I post content daily. I'm one subscriber shy of 300, and I'm trying to get to 1,000 people. So I know I got a long way to go, and I haven't cut my hair. Tomorrow will be 7 weeks. If you could watch me on YouTube now, or for those listening, you can go to the YouTube channel and you can see for yourself. But please tell your friends, family, frenemies, foes about the channel. Sports, I sprinkled in with a little bit of life. I got a lot coming down the pike in the weeks, not only just with the podcast, but also some other projects that I'm working on. So you definitely want to stay tuned to that. Also on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, hit me up, JReels Podcast, Twitter, XJReels, one just a number, the old-fashioned way, the JReels Podcast at gmail.com. I'll be more than happy to follow up with you guys and gals, because whether you do or do not know, this is what I love to do, people. It's in the blood, it's in the DNA, as I like to say, every fiber of my being, with nothing but passion, fire, fury, energy with my thoughts, opinions, critiques, praise, analysis, feelings on anything and everything that happens on the world of the diamond, ice, gridiron, hardwood, golf course, racetrack, tennis court, boxing, octagon, you name it. From my lips to your ears, from my heart to your soul, from where I am to wherever you are as I slow it down, the JReels Podcast always comes correct, directed, and full even. From the South Bronx, the Southeast, the South Central, the South Pacific, and all points beyond, peace, love, and God bless everybody. And until next time on the JReels Podcast, on the flip, baby.